Welcome to Go Home Where We Think Your Life. This is Sean Suarez reporting. Hello, humans, and welcome to Out of Your Face, episode 134. We are an irreverent podcast about the music news and culture that mostly matters. I'm Sean.
I'm Dan.
And this is Out of Your Face. I just said that. We're coming from you from Quarantined Island, from Quarantineville.
By the way, we are roommates, so we've been quarantined together this whole time. So that's why we're this distance apart.
Yeah.
But yeah, otherwise we would encourage you to actually stay apart from each other, we're
going down together. The ship's going
yeah,
down.
At this
Audio
point.
Face, Audio Face rolls together, the good and the bad.
Audio Face has always been before the bodies are cold, and this time we need to stop because this is actually really serious.
Deadass. So we've got three albums for you guys. We have After Hours by The Weeknd. We got Oasis Nocturno by Talking Monster. We got,
what do we have here? What do we have here?
And then we have
Childish Gambino.
Childish Gambino. Donald Glover.
I thought he retired.
I'm tired. We have 3/15/2020 by Childish Gambino that dropped this morning.
Yeah, that dropped the morning we're recording this, which is Sunday morning. We had published this on Monday morning. So we had previously planned to have Megan Thee Stallion and Fortet. They've released albums this month, obviously, because Megan Thee Stallion's was earlier this month.
Yes.
And technically earlier this year. It's been a long month year. And then Fortet released something. Mm. We listened to them,
but we're just going to delay them until next week because we don't want to talk about good music right now.
And then
I'm not saying that they're bad.
It's just that there's...
Pressing matters.
We can only review so many things at once. And The Weeknd, Talking Monster, and Childish Gambino is quite a roll of the dice here.
That's the stuff that was the freshest off our mind. So we want to talk about that so we can give everything a fair and honest review. Fair, balanced, and unafraid. So...
Remember to share the podcast wherever you're listening and follow us on Twitter and Instagram and stuff. Let's get into it.
Let's jump in. So yeah, the Donald Glover thingy. So his stream that was last Sunday that the stream went up, right? It was a stream for the album, kind of like what Adams for Peace did, and some others have done this before, where they pop up for a little bit, and it went away like pretty early on, right?
It went away like we published Monday morning.
Yeah,
Shortly after we published the episode, in which we're talking as though it was Sunday because it was when we recorded it.
Yes.
It was already gone off the internet.
Yeah.
But now it's the one that's available that you can stream entirely. All of the truly in stream form, like all of the song names, most of the song names are time codes.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really intending that you listen to the album fully, and there's quite a lot of interesting things in that album. There's SZA, there's Ariana Grande, there's 21 Savage, and so we'll be able to talk about that at the end of this episode.
We'll do that later.
Because we listened to it kind of last week, but we said, hey, when this properly gets released, because it's clearly finished, we'll give it the proper Audio Face review.
Correct.
And even though we've only had this morning to really dig into it, we've given it the proper Audio Face review. But that's at the end. Let's continue.
Let's jump in. So Rihanna, bad girl Riri, she announces a $5 million donation to coronavirus relief.
$5 million U.S. dollars.
$5 million U.S. It's corona time. So that's kind of cool, I guess.
$700,000 is going to go towards the purchase of ventilators for our home country of Barbados because
that's kind of cool.
There's two points in this that I think are really interesting. One is just the top level numbers. $5 million from a celebrity is the one to beat because there are a bunch of celebrities who put together a cover of John Lennon's Imagine to help with the coronavirus. It's a wonderful benefit concert. Literally $0 were made. And but, like, you know, people were kind of saying, hey, everyone with the capital in the world, this is the emergency scenario. We don't tax you enough, so what are you going to do before we tax you, or worse? And currently, Rihanna's $5 million donation, personally, I think is the one to beat, other than, like, people who have...
Freedom fighter there.
Yeah. Totally good. And definitely, it's the second thing I was going to say, it's good that it's going to a country like Barbados, countries that don't, on their own, aren't able to support themselves, even in, like, standard okay times. But definitely in times like this, you really think about people like who are homeless, people in vulnerable populations who don't have a good go of it on a day-to-day basis. It's especially bad right now. So any support that can be shown by listeners of this podcast or by celebrities is definitely appreciated.
Nah, every man for himself. So let's go into our first album review. We have
already. Wow.
Yeah, we'll jump right in, baby. So we've got The Weeknd, After Hours, 14 songs, 56 minutes long. Talk about King Fuckboy. He hasn't changed one bit. He is still King Fuckboy.
I disagree very strongly. I think this is the next arc in the weekend's, like, I'm actually not being sarcastic.
Interesting.
Actually, this is the latest part in the weekend's overall arc, and he's doing something which most celebrity musician mm-hmm. artists don't do, which is grow the fuck up.
Well, I was about to say, it's not the Gustavo Stein song last year where he said, I want to fuck you slowly, the lights on. It's not...
Maybe you can bring a friend who could sit on top of face while I fuck you straight.
Exactly. It's not that. It's definitely...
Politically
speaking. It still has, like, the fuckboy mentality because that's his persona.
That's the weekend.
That's the weekend, exactly. But I was going to say, it's not bad. There's a couple songs in here I like.
And
there's
a lot of themes. Really.
But there's a little thing. The first part of the album, I was underwhelmed a lot by the first... about 3 or 4 songs. It took me a while to get into it, and I had to listen to it twice, and actually a little bit after to get into it, because he saved the best for the later half of the album.
I agree. Far. The latter half of the album is amazing. Just like incredible, really, and then after that, before that, I was just sort of like, okay, this is passable weekend. Like, mm-hmm. there's a couple songs on here in the earlier part. I think Alone Again and Too Late started very strongly. Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
I was very happy with the way those
Alone Again, I like it. Just it's slow, and because of the two singles that were released, I didn't know too much what to expect, and that's like the sound I didn't expect coming from out, if that makes sense. So I was thrown off guard.
That's true. Yeah,
very thrown off guard.
The Weeknd also released like an EP a while ago too.
Correct.
And it was very, very, it was very, very like kind of sad and slower. I think it was either like Blinding Lights or Heartless. It was like a collection of...
Well, there was the two. Blinding Lights and Heartless was the ones he released
in
November.
Those are singles,
Those are two singles he released in November. And then it was something else that I believe he did.
Yeah, I do super remember like an EP that came together. Maybe it's not showing up on here. Maybe because a lot of artists like batch together songs that are on an EP mm-hmm. and then get rid of it once the album comes out. It's a new like streaming era kind of thing. But either the way, there's definitely like a melancholy sad boy weekend that happened after that mm-hmm. infamous episode, which we'll talk a little more later because it references it. But yeah, this is basically all to say the album's very good, but the beginning of it leaves a little bit to be desired.
For sure.
It's like they're fine songs, but they're definitely...
The production is great.
The production is good. And the production, the weekend's leaning heavily on a lot of other people to like help him out here
for
with
sure.
this. But
Dio
I think
always has done that.
The biggest turn where like I did my first eyebrow raise started with Escape from LA.
Yeah, I was about to say it. That's the song I have on my headphone because I really like that song.
Yeah. You want to go into it?
No, you can go.
Okay.
Because no, you were talking about it. I was like, oh yeah.
No, I was going to say Escape to LA is where like the entire album to me kind of took a turn because mm-hmm. it has the Weeknd's like he's starting to really kind of get in. He's starting to really get emotional. And the reason why I disagreed earlier when I said that there was like an arc that the Weeknd's had in his career, and this is actually a change in it, is because it's very apparent, like extremely on the nose actually, that this album, and especially Escape from LA and like the rest of it, is the result of a significant amount of heartbreak the Weeknd has.
Oh,
a significant amount
sure.
of turn of phrase. Like,
yeah.
One of my friends said, you have to be very sad to understand this album.
Well, because that's why I was going to say, these four songs, Escape from LA, Heartless, Faith, and Blinding Lights, that shit just dives you right in the feels. And those four are some of his best work, I think.
Yeah.
By far. The production of it, the lyrics, everything, that mood it sets for it, I loved it.
I was going to pick Faith as my favorite.
Interesting. Mine is might honestly be Heartless. Production of it is really good. I also like Blinding Light. Like, first off, Metro Boomin is insane. Like Metro Boomin is ridiculous.
Sean got to say that. Sean, like, is saying that a trap producer is insane and ridiculous. His words.
Metro Boomin is really fucking good. I like a lot of his work. I like a lot of 21 Savage. A lot of that is produced by Metro Boomin. I said in the Audio Face Awards, as much as I hate Drake, I like Drake and Future when they had Metro Boomin produce some of his stuff.
Yeah.
Fantastic, because I think with a lot of Metro Boomin productions is he makes high quality trap. Because the thing, like, with Lil... I don't know who produced Lil Uzi Vert. Is it just him who produces it? Or does he have...
No, he had a team of people.
And a couple other...
It was a range.
Yeah,
because... Like, Lil Uzi Vert had, like, the basic idea of, like, I want to sound kind of like this. But yeah. A couple of artists, like, applied their style to it.
Okay, so that's my thing with other trap artists a lot of the times is that they... There's a lot of stuff missing to it, or it just feels really stripped down to where it's just a couple instruments. And for trap, you need to produce... to it to make it so damn crisp to make it sound good, or else it feels really cheap because so many people are doing it. And the thing that this whole vibe of the album goes in general is it's that 80s sad boy theme, and I really like that, especially on those four songs, Escape from LA, Heartless, Faith, Blinding Lights. Those all, especially like Blinding Lights, that's a straight up like little 80s tune bop theme with a little trap beat underneath it. That's what I was saying. People need to do a trap. They need to mix a bunch of different sounds. Because you can. We've seen it before. But not many people are doing it. But with those couple songs, I'm like, oh my god, people can do it. Yeah. And you can have really good vocals over a trap beat too. It doesn't just have to be rap.
It's what I try to say. Like, there's good trap out there. You have to really
find it.
Yeah. It's really good that, like, this is in really mainstream shit.
Exactly. Too. So now I'm like...
You'll have something to point to.
People are listening to Audio Face. That's what I'm trying to
get to. It's also... It's trap, it's very, like, The Weeknd is ambiguous, because The Weeknd isn't much of a rapper. It's kind of more like Trap and B, kind of like, there were a couple albums in, like, 2017 that were very, like this as well, by Black with a 6. Mm-hmm. I was definitely thinking of that. But, I just gotta say, Escape from LA has one line that is just, like, incredible. In addition to being, like, a really interesting song about, like, having a bunch of movie references in it, there's one line where you can very tell it's on the nose after the bridge where he's just like, LA girls, they all look the same.
Oh,
I can't recognize the same work done on their face. I don't criticize.
Yep.
LA girls all look the same. I can't recognize. Same work done on their face. I don't criticize. She a cold-hearted bitch with no shame, but her throat too far. She got chrome hearts hanging from her neck, and them shits going wild when she rides. She holds tight.
It's funny because Sean Suarez actually does criticize that on Audio Face.
Oh, 100%. You just gotta go in the archives and find it.
It may or may not be episode 88 of Audio Face. One can find that. But there's a funny thing, because we actually talked about, that was the episode we talked about Gesaffelstein and The Weeknd.
Yes.
And he was like, to pick up on my earlier point, The Weeknd was very much in that time in 2017. And I'm
dating Victoria's Secret models. I am this and that. And
just coming off of Starboy, which was like admittedly a good album, but like he got Daft Punk to produce some songs on it. Like it was a really good like thing. He was doing arena shows. Like he was top of the world. But like, you know, you get that, you let that get to your head. The Weeknd needed some of that good old-fashioned humility for him to, like, struggle enough for him to make a good album, and I think we're better for that.
It's the second half of this album is very, very good. In Your Eyes has is more upbeat coming off of those four tracks that are super sad boy.
Yeah.
Save Your Tears is good.
The interlude is really good.
Repeat after me.
After Hours and Until I Bleed Out, you know what I'm looking for this year. It's
the closing songs
that beats Demon Days. Mm-hmm. This is the closest that's come to it.
It's great.
Incredible.
Really,
very
really good.
The title track, After Hours, is very good. And then it leads into Until I Bleed Out very well. But, and I think this is the thing I really look for in these things, alone, they're both different songs with different vibes.
Yes.
But together, they create this whole piece where it's like mm-hmm. part one, part two of this grand ending thing that feels like it has a lot of like depth and power to it. I highly recommend listening to both side by side.
But he surprised me because I thought that I was going to really criticize him because what I've been saying for a while and a bunch of other people said that The Weeknd, all he does is just curse in really falsetto-y voice. Because again, I remember saying this before, I'm like, he has an amazing voice, he just needs to figure it out a little bit. And yeah, I could see that. He's actually, because especially Escape from LA, a couple other songs, he's getting more into his feelings of like, oh, love is real. It's not just be about being a sad fuckboy.
Love is real, like, it hurts, like it's more than just being like, more than just... By sad but fuck boy, there's also like I in that episode reference aggressive tender DMs guy, and that should give like a certain mood to it. But it's also just like, you know, you've every stereotype of LA, you move there and then the city gets to you and you become this like detached from reality sort of person as a result. And so this is kind of the recovery album for that, and it's a damn good project. I had to listen to it once or twice to actually go, really good? Do I like this? And I think I'm just shocked that I do.
It's going to take me a few more listens to get into it because it's not what I expected from him. Because even
you
when
expected
it was,
worse or better?
Worse, but like more poppy-ish sounds, more generic sounds, because when he released the tracks in November, I remember Caesar from the We Made a Podcast is like, bruh, you gotta listen to this. And Caesar is the biggest Weeknd hater in the world. And he's like, this is great. And I'm like, what the hell? Like, when did this happen? So this album came out, I really didn't know what to expect. And it's something that did surprise me. It's gonna take me a while to really appreciate it. And I think later down the line, I'll like it even more than I do now. And I think it'll, because the more and more I listen to even the opening tracks, I like them. It's just since it's such a pivot and stuff, I have to get into it a little bit more. So it's something that will grow with time. It's like Tranquility Base, Hotel Casino, that same feeling
Similar.
I had. Like where I'm like, it's going to take me a long time to like it. And now that album is like on my top five.
Yeah, that album started really well.
Oh, yeah.
And then like carried in a good way. But anyways, like
anyways,
the album we were talking about, the thing, the EP we were trying
my
to
My Dear Melancholy, there we go.
Yes,
thank you.
My Dear Melancholy.
Thank you.
I knew it exists. Spotify trying to gaslight me there for a second.
Right.
But anyways, Arbitrary Scale. The Arbitrary Scale this week is very thought out. Because it is common grocery store items you can't fucking find anymore.
So this is like, this is bread. This is bread.
I was
Wonder bread.
No, I was gonna say this is eggs.
This is eggs, eggs and bread, solid.
Yeah, this is just like the staples.
Staples, eggs and really bread. Good. Like it's a pain in the ass to find that shit right now, and people are hoarders because humanity is stupid. So there you go.
Extremely.
Speaking of, it's Corona time. Let's give you a little list.
I don't even have a list. We already did this. I just want to like point out that like more things have been canceled. I think Bonnaroo was the big one that got added to
no,
the
no,
list.
No. The big one.
For you.
No. For the world. For Sean World. Is that the 1975 postponed their fucking tour?
For you.
Yes, exactly. But the world revolves around Sean, Dan. Get the memo.
Where's my alcohol?
Get it right. Oh Lord! Anyway, like they were postponed their tour, so then it's sad.
Fuck in me. Most cases, people are being refunded for their tickets.
Yeah,
if you're on StubHub, you're on Schitt's Creek without a paddle.
Yeah,
but like if
fuck StubHub. There are a bunch of people that are getting refunds and stuff for tours and other events, but pretty much anything's on hold until earliest summer. People are like, especially a lot of house DJs and stuff. We're joking that it says save the summer. Like, that's the goal, is like, just save the summer.
Glastonbury is also another big one that got put on the list of, like, we're not doing this, we're canceled.
Yep, which sucks, and that's the beginning of summer, and Glastonbury is one of the best festivals ever.
Well, arguably the best.
And, it's interesting because, actually, Taylor Swift is supposed to head Glastonbury, which that would have been interesting to see.
Yeah.
I wanted to see how that would work out, but nope.
Nope. We will have a link in the description as we did last episode.
Yeah.
For the podcast apps that allow links in descriptions. To an article on Consequence of Sound that has like a running list of all the big festivals and big concerts that have been canceled and even a lot of the smaller ones. But yeah, the general advice is your concert 60% chance was canceled, and if it's rescheduled, there's a date for it being rescheduled and your tickets are still fine. If it's not rescheduled, then either you'll get refunded or another interesting thing will happen.
Yes.
We'll see.
All right. More music for you fine gentlemen's and ladies and non-binaries is Oasis Nocturno by Talking Monster. 12 songs, 45 minutes long.
Another fucking phenomenal
like,
album.
Like, I don't even know where to start with this shit because there's one song on here. I want you to guess what song it is. That shit's been on repeat forever. I'm interested to hear if you know how well you know my music taste. There's one for sure that I'm like,
God, I don't know how to pick one because like there's a couple, but like the great thing, I'll get around to this, but like the great thing about this album is that there's so many different kind of sounds in here that work together that you can kind of pick one out on its own. Mm-hmm. It's like, this is a great R&B song. This is a great experimental techno song. Mm-hmm. This is a great, these are all these great things coming out at once that like, Talking Monster is just like kind of one in a kind, amazing and doing. I have a couple that I can guess would be the ones you like. I'm going to lean towards like, because this is kind of a electronic infused album. I'm going to lean more to those things because there are
getting warmer.
Yeah, there are other songs in there that I think have like pop sounds that are also you're acclimated to. Mm-hmm. But would it be To Be Remote?
To Be Remote would be my second pick.
What about Renter's Anthem?
Yeah, Renter's Anthem is his Lord bless Jesus, Muhammad, Allah, all of them wrapped into one because it is straight 2001 to underground French house.
Yeah, it was a single that was released from the album. It's really good.
Oh my God, I've been listening to that shit on repeat for, like, once I heard this album, I guess the first three tracks, loved it. I'm like, ooh, this is, Talking Monster is interesting because I had some issues with Lune Rouge that came out 2017. We talked about it, like a lot of her work, but there was some stuff I thought was missing.
Yeah.
There's nothing missing from this album at all. Like, I can already say that. Like, I love it. But those first three songs really sucked me in. I really like the features because the features, they can do their thing, but the production of it, you can still feel that Talking Monster is making most of it, if that makes sense. Because that's a lot of issues when you have, I don't have to say this plenty of times, but when you have a producer make an album, like an EDM, or I should say EDM, but I mean, for lack of a better term, an electronic music maker make an album, I have features on, is usually the features put too much of their own sound in it and then it detracts from it.
Just to be clear, the features put too much of the featuring artist sound on
exactly.
it, and not enough of the main artist sound, so it doesn't actually come off as a cohesive project, right?
Exactly. Because, yes. Example, like Metro Boomin, Not All Heroes Wear Capes, that's Metro Boomin album, but some of the features in it were fantastic because it worked and it sounded like a Metro Boomin album. That's a good example for everybody.
And like I think the real art in those is that like, each song on that album lends itself a little bit to the style of any 21 Savage song, regardless of who it's produced by, although many have been produced by Metro Boomin and many are good, have like a certain sound to them.
Yeah.
Like a thing that works with them. Like,
yeah. You can see we'll get to that with Childish Gambino.
But
where I was going, because you have a wide variety of people on this album. You have Earth Gain, which is the one of the songs I was trying to get to, Fried for the Night. You think an Earth Gain's track would come on here and it would just like disrupt the flow of the album. Doesn't at all. Still sticks with the whole theme of it, the production of it, everything.
It's good to hear because you did not like the single when it first came out.
No.
You really didn't.
I did not. But in the context of the album, it makes so much more sense.
Yeah, and I knew it kind of would. Like, to me, it was the same thing I was saying, where it, like, It sounded enough like an Earth Gang song because Earth Gang itself are very like experimental and they try different things. Like, I could believe that much that far, but it definitely still had a Talking Monster kind of technological vibe. And I think it was like a really like close mix together that I saw. So it was like really pushing it.
Ah!
But rip headphone users. But if you didn't, if you noticed properly, like there'd be the two artists colliding together. Like I said, it's very rigid, but it ultimately works, I really believe.
Yeah, and there's a lot with this album. To Be Remote, that's a really good song.
To Be Remote is really a very on the nose named song, especially right now, but it is really good. It's really great. We'll be right back. It's, I don't even know what to say, but it's kind of ambient, but also, because there's not many lyrics to it.
No, there's barely anything to
it. But it's just like a really beautiful sounding track that goes like a lot of phases and everything. It's just like, it's a really good like background song, but it's also like, it's a really wide use applicable song.
Exactly.
Really early on in the album, a song that I really loved was One Day.
One Day, yep.
Yeah,
One
because, Day's fantastic. Yeah, it's very, like I said, it's the most maybe R&B song on the album. But it just goes to show, like, Talking Monsta has producing chops. She only gets better as, like, you want artists to really do.
Dude, she's just, her arc is coming, like, wow.
She is, like, a really modern day, I would compare her to, fuck, you really like her, Icelandic artist.
Björk?
Yes.
Yeah, no, that's actually a very, like, the production value of it, I can see, yeah. That's a good comparison because she's very experimental in it. She has such a wide range. That's one thing I was thinking of when I was listening to this album. Like, this is, like, a modern Björk with a little bit more dance influence to it.
Yes.
And without Björk, but the main thing with Björk is her voice is fucking incredible, but her production is...
Talking
Monsta's production is that level of... You can mix so many different sounds into one album, but make it cohesive. And I did the thing where I shuffled it, and it still works.
And it sounds like Talking Monsta the whole way.
Ridiculous. That's so hard to do. This, yeah, top to bottom, amazing. Phases is great. The song Fried for the Night with Earth Gang. Higher Hopes with really Rosa Heart. Amazing. It triggered me because it said Higher Hopes. I'm like, if it said High Hopes, I wasn't going to listen to it on principle.
Higher Hopes, so it's better. Yeah.
And I was like, oh, let's see what happens. Because,
but it's such a beautiful
song.
Oh
my God. The things that you're looking for, the ending, two ending tracks, these I think were amazing for ending tracks. Just because I'm longing for love, baby.
Higher Hopes, because I think the really cool thing about it was like it started kind of slow and I didn't really
and then just build up and like that first
and it built
like,
up really quickly
and those last 2 minutes felt like Tycho.
Yeah,
like just felt like a more upbeat style of Tycho almost in it, and I really really like that. This album's good,
really great.
Listen to it, folks. It's really not. It's 45 minutes long. You've got the time because we're all in quarantine together. So do yourselves a favor and listen to this shit.
Yeah. I would say this is like that good ass like 5-ply toilet paper.
This is that Charmin Ultra blue toilet paper.
Soft.
Like that's that soft, like doesn't rip, doesn't do anything, like it gets the job done. That's that good
hard
toilet
to
paper.
Find.
Hard to find.
Essential.
Lovely toilet paper. That's this album.
Tremendous.
That's
big
the
strong
worst toilet paper. It's just hilarious. We're just like, we're comparing an album to toilet paper, but it's just in the context of it, you need to know what we're talking about because this album is the literal polar opposite of toilet paper.
But you're not even like wiping, but you're not wiping shits with this toilet paper. Like you're just like cleaning.
You're dabbing pee. You're just like, you're just going a little dab dab and then you're just like, you know, it doesn't clog your pipes. This toilet paper doesn't clog pipes. That's how good this shit is.
I've been watching old King of the Hill episodes and I totally forgot the running joke was that he has a narrow urethra.
Oh yeah, that's funny.
Okay, I'm just gonna stop right now. It's an incredible album. Please listen to it.
Please. So, plenty of artists have been doing live stream concerts. They've been doing either like YouTube live streams, Instagram lives, a bunch of stuff. Since
Twitch.
Twitch, yeah. Even which I thought was pretty cool. Doing little at home concerts because they're all promoting Stay at Home and other shit. So like Chris Martin, Niall's done it, Neil Young,
Niall Horan,
yep, Disclosure, Neon Indian, a bunch of artists have done it.
Erykah Badu, many artists.
Many, where they've been doing a lot of at-home concerts. Some of them have been interactive concerts too, where they've been going on Instagram Live requesting stuff. Like Chris Martin was that way, and he did some old, like before they sold out Coldplay, which I thought was really fucking cool.
And yeah, these have been really like low. These have almost like felt like NPR Tiny Desk
concerts. Yeah, exactly. I was about to say that. They straight up feel like Tiny Desk concerts or like Chill Wave to Study To. Chill Beat to Study To.
Yeah, lo-fi vibes. Hip-hop beats.
Yeah, like what Neon Indian did since he's like, Italy's been on super duper shutdown mode. He's like, I'm going to do an Italian disco style set. And his shit was awesome. I thought that was really cool. And he had a lot of Italians chiming in and being really happy about it. So it's really cool to see how music can heal people. Music can be the one of the biggest combining forces to unite everybody in shitty situations like this.
Yeah.
So keep it up, artists. I love it.
So, like, I did have, like, a couple of talking points about this that are kind of
okay,
conversational.
Okay, talking points, Dan.
Talking points memo. Just get the sidebar thing with Billa Rapist on here. Are we accidentally inventing a new form of concert experience by these people doing these shows? Like, is this something that artists might do more often? I mean, I would love for artists to.
Because my favorite thing in the world when I was younger, right, was when they filmed live concerts and they released it to the masses. Because you have, like, my favorite thing ever was listening to Radiohead shows. You have, like, 2009 Prague, 2008 Japan, you have Glastonbury 03.
That's why we have the Radiohead Public Library right now.
Literally.
They did such a good job of, like, recording their live shows that now people can look at the archives online.
Yeah, because what really got me...
Great timing.
Right? Extreme great timing. If you want a deep, deep dive on Radiohead, go look that up. But the biggest thing, actually, what turned me on to was Scotch Mist. Was the 2007 webcast that they had right before the release of In Rainbows. That was the very first live stream I've ever seen in my life. One of the very first public live streams, like big ones anywhere in general.
Yeah, live streaming was only like a popular big thing. They wouldn't have the bandwidth and the infrastructure to do that in like 05, 06.
Yeah, and they did it. And like the quality is doo-doo, but it was so cool to be interactive with that. And like there's clips and stuff where Tommy was like, I don't know if anyone can hear me, but here we go. And stuff like that. So I've always loved those interactive concerts or little concerts like that because you could save them and keep them. And you can listen to them. And this is where, to me, some of the best artists are made because you can go back into their live tracks and then compare their live to their recorded versions.
I mean, even if you don't have to like compare and say, oh, this artist is good because their live version is
good.
Like,
you don't have
some
to.
Artists are better recorded than live, and that's
fine, exactly.
But like, it's...
It's cool to see the differences and see how certain artists make... Because there's certain places where you're like, how the hell do you do this live?
Yeah.
And if they can pull it off, it's like, wow, that's amazing.
My different take from it is that one of my favorite things about going to live concerts as an experience is going to smaller concerts where the shows are intimate and you can almost like touch the artist. And it's like only maybe 500-700 people max. Yes, maybe, yeah, 200 or 300.
If you get a 200 one, like at the Roxy or something, that's great. That's like, such a cool experience.
It brings
experience.
Back the kind of intimacy of those shows, even though you're doing it for way more people.
Exactly.
And especially at this kind of time where we're supposed to keep a huge distance from each other, like, this can really bring that kind of experience back. Because concerts are dead
across
the entire world for at least a year, honestly, if we're being real about it.
Yeah, but it depends. There's a lot of variables, but...
Based on what I know about the way coronavirus spreads, combined with, like, humanity's ability to really, like, contain the spread of it, like... Coronavirus is going to have flare-ups, and COVID-19 is going to have flare-ups, and it's going to have be contagious in society for at least a year before there's like a vaccine we can give people.
Yeah.
We're about a year and a half out. Like, it's easily 2021, optimistically, if everything goes well until we have a vaccine. So it's going to be.
But where is that going to go? The nice thing with these concerts.
That's really so depressing.
Right. The nice scenes of these concerts is that artists are seeing people talk to them and responding to them and stuff and saying, oh, like, look, like Chris Cromartin, he was going along saying people were requesting songs, like, oh, I can see someone put this, I'll do this song for them.
Yeah.
And stuff will give them a little shout out. I mean, that's what like Twitch streamers do that as gamers. They do it all the time. Like, oh, thank you, this and this. And like with Rooster Teeth, one of my favorite gaming people, they've done that for the entire history of their company. And I think that's one of the best ways that musicians can go into that streaming world, go into almost like gaming world mentality where the communities are so tight knit because everyone has an interaction with it because you see everything online, you see it all now, then you get to know people a little bit more and you can get to see the lives of artists a little bit more instead of just having like that barrier between them.
Yeah.
So I think it's cool.
I think it's super cool. I hope it becomes a thing that
really
outlasts
thing.
This era.
Yeah, 100%.
And especially my last point, if artists like during their break periods, like after releasing an album, after going on tour, they've been quiet for a while, they're just like, hey, you know, I'm getting back into things, or I just want to do something for fun, I'm just going to do a live mix. Like, I think that's only like, music is
I love it. Like, Maddie does that a lot, where Maddie Healy did one of guitar work, where he's like, this is how I play, like, randomly, he's like, this is how I play certain songs. So it's cool to see how you do that, and I love artists doing that. Always have. All right, last album of the day. We've got Childish Gambino's 3/15/20. That's the wrong way to do dates. It should be 15/3/20, bud.
It's a way to do dates. 12 songs long, 57, 58 minutes.
Yeah, 57 minutes long.
It's kind of incredible. So, like, as we said in the earlier beginning of this podcast, this was...
I actually need my headphone for this because the weird thing about this album is most of the titles, there's 0.00, there's algorithm time, and all the rest are numbers.
All the rest are time codes.
Time codes, yeah.
Yeah, so like if you listen to this album as a full work, the time codes are like when you would hear the album.
Exactly.
Which is very much like the stream, which mm-hmm. this started as, because it was originally Donald Glover Presents on his website. You could stream and hear the audio of this entire thing. But yeah, now it's available to stream for normal people because it was taken down a week later. And you can now get this whole album. And so we kind of thought Childish Gambino, we thought that his last album would be like his last, or he would like kind of slow down from there.
Yes.
He had made his last tour saying like, hey, this is the last time I'm going on tour. This might still be possible. It might be a Jay-Z retirement kind of thing.
Yeah.
But there are a lot of songs on here that have trickled out from the Gambino project mm-hmm. and a lot of new things. And the basic idea you should get from this is that a lot of past Gambino has gone through like rap and then through
so
like R&B.
Yep.
And now it's like he's gone fully experimental.
Straight experimental. And this is great. This is a really good work of...
We have three basically possible album of the year contenders one week.
Like, what is this year? I don't know how we're going to do awards lists. Like, Jesus. There's so much good music that's out this year. But anyways, Algorithm is amazing. He actually saw a live version, a very like...
I saw a live
like a choppy live version of it, especially like the big bass line and everything else.
Yeah. This is America tour, mm-hmm. basically in like late 2018 that he was doing.
Yes. So my biggest thing with this album is that one of my favorite artists, right, is Jai Paul. I talked about him a lot. This album gives me a giant Jai Paul vibe of the experimentation of just something that no one else makes, right? No one really makes sounds like these, or there's very few that do that. And this is one of those albums where I don't even know how to explain half of this music other than it's experimental as fuck, but it's good. It's combining chill wave with disco, with new wave, with a bunch of different styles, combining stuff, making new ones even, where you have feature acts that come out onto it. You have 21 Savage, Our Boy, who came out onto one. I think it was 1238, I believe, is the one with 21.
Yeah,
exactly.
Time with Ariana Grande.
Not going to say anything about that.
And I believe that there was another artist on here as well. I'm pretty sure SZA was on there somewhere, but I need to find it.
Yeah, but anyways, God, it's incredible. I really 1910 is just this awesome funky groove beat with it, where it feels like if Jai Paul mixed Afrobeats instead of more Indian sounds into his work. That's what it sounds like. Algorithm is a straight up like experimental bass line of where you're just combining all these different sounds of like garage, house,
industrial,
very old forms of dubstep, like scream version of dubstep, like the early 2000s. Combine all of those to just make it sound so dystopian, and that's the entire theme of the album. It's kind of that dystopian feel of there's so much weirdness going on, even in like your own personal life, where that's getting out into this.
Just like a raw expression, almost like how the sun just like emits like periods of loud rage.
Yeah, exactly.
Outside.
Yeah,
it's just that like raw, yeah. Yeah,
that's
like,
that raw expression, raw, of that raw energy.
Of that energy.
That is a great analogy for this like album.
This album is nuclear fission.
Deada. Like, it is straight up shooting an atom into another atom, seeing it explode and just create more atoms. That is what this album is. There's so much to choose from. You have Feels Like Summer, which is 4226, the 10th song, which just came out before, which is amazing. The big thing too, these songs are really long as well. You have like 7 minute, 8 minutes, 6 minutes, 5 minutes. And some of these songs are broken up into pieces as well, where there's like, they start transforming into another pieces, or they have like the last little 30 seconds or so will be little skits or little things that go into the next song. So it's very unique in that way. And it sounds like from top to bottom, it sounds like a mixtape almost, like mixtape feels of how everything connects to it, how everything goes into one another. I don't know, that's not a complaint, because even if I put it on shuffle, I could still, everything still goes together as well.
I like 47, 48. Song near the end.
If it had a
title, it would probably be called Violence, because that's like the thing and
the title part. 1910 is probably my favorite.
Is that the 21 one?
That's the one after 21.
Yeah.
4748 is really good. It felt like if Surfaces got an electric keyboard.
Yeah.
Like, it had that like that little like surfer rock feel at the beginning of it, like that driving down LA vibe, but with much more into it than just that.
Borderline psychedelic, but exactly. This album has like R&B elements in it. It has experimental elements. I describe this as like experimental Kanye before 2011. My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy before.
If Nigel Godrich went up with Kanye West and made an album.
Yeah, that's actually kind of possible. When the Radiohead producers.
Yeah, the main Radiohead and Adams for Peace producer and Tom York producer, Nigel Godrich. That sound of just
that added with like a really like even like R&B, because there's an R&B element that doesn't capture neither one of those. That's like really true and true here, and it's like
kind of 4748. You have the R&B element for sure. This is masterpiece almost.
It's ridiculous. This like The Weeknd, but in a different way, which kind of like you compared to the Arctic Monkeys album from last year, Tranquility Base.
Yes,
I will need more listens. 100%.
There's so much to choose from. And this, for me, this is my first all the way listening through was this morning.
Yeah.
So this is my, now I'm listening to it a third time. I listened to it twice today.
Yeah. Usually we review albums on this podcast and it's like, you know, it's kind of great. There's some things we didn't like, but there are like some parts where the albums faltered in the middle or like we could have just gone without it. Here, at the very least, even parts of the albums we didn't like this week, and especially with the Gambino album, we would just like come back to and definitely think there's something there. And it's the things we did just like make the albums like album of the year
too. Exactly. So really I think it's one of those things because it's so different. It's very unique in that way where it's going to take so many listens to
all three of these albums. Yeah.
Yeah. To dive in and go, okay, what does this mean? What is all of this stuff? I have to look up lists of lyrics because a lot of the lyrics are really hidden and stuff, or they're so distorted where I'm trying to figure out what he's saying, but it's hard to hear it. So there's a lot of that aspect too, where then that'll make songs have more sense. But from an artist standpoint of Childish Gambino, this is like, his arc is amazing because of how much his evolution is, how much he's changed his sound over time. He's not a one-trick pony, not even remotely close.
Yeah, 1,000%. And
yeah, he's amazing. The guy is so talented. This is Jobs. This is
the Dow Jones at 22,000.
Yeah, this is the Dow Jones at like
this
19.
Is the Dow Jones in mid-February.
It's hard to come by a job nowadays, right? Unemployment's going to be skyrocketing. This is like a high-paying, this is an essential, high-paying essential job.
This is a high-paying essential work-from-home job.
Right? That is like the holy grail that you want, right?
Pick two.
That is this album. It's just unbelievably good. So,
please listen to all of these albums. Please listen to them all the way through in order, then shuffle them, but just like enjoy this shit. It's really good music. We're really lucky.
So we have two little fun stories always to end Audio Face with. This one is hilarious. Oh my God, I was about to say it, but I'm not going to.
Kanye West and Taylor Swift. But there's been a back and forth, you know, she said, they said, kind of whole relationship with them. Mm-hmm. But this is...
I'm gonna let you finish real quick.
Yeah. Let me jump in a little bit after that moment. But yeah. When Kanye West is writing a very different
A very fun song called Famous.
Yeah, from a very different album that wasn't one of the experimental Kanye albums we were talking about just recently. But yes. From The Life of Pablo. T-Lop.
Which one?
Also called by Annie, friend of Audio Faces, F-Lop. Or I think you called it S-Lop.
S-Lop. Yep.
So anyways, basically, we had always known that there was video of Kanye West calling Taylor Swift to approve the lyrics Famous. Yeah. The lyrics, which I might add, to all my Southside niggas that know me best, feel like me and Taylor might still have sex. Why? I made the bitch famous. End quote. We saw a video, and basically it's like this 20-minute video. We're going to try to recap for you here. Yeah. Thanks to Ren Graves, A Consequence of Sound, for getting this together. But like, basically, it's Kanye West calling Taylor Swift going like, hey, I have this line. Do you want me? It's about you. Do you approve me using this in my song? And to be fair, Kanye didn't include the I made the bitch famous part. It was I made her famous, so it didn't say the bitch. So there's one aspect of that. But apparently Taylor Swift even edited one of the lines.
Yeah.
Because it was going to be, quote, Taylor Swift might owe me sex from Taylor Swift might still have sex. Which, you know, noted feminist Taylor Swift.
No, feminist Taylor Swift. I have a little more worth than this. But she approved of that part.
Yeah. She approved of the might still have sex part.
Exactly.
But in no point does Kanye West in the video where he's asking for approval say the word bitch.
No.
He said, bitch.
But anyway, so the best part is that they went over a PR strategy of when the song was released and how to go over it already.
Which, by the way, is just like a little window into the veil of Kanye West knows the dumb shit he's doing half the time.
Because he said also was brought into this, he was on the phone with her saying, oh yeah, the whole running for president thing, like I already knew, like I popped that up in the shower one time while smoking weed. Like I already knew everything I'm gonna do. And people fall for this shit.
We need to keep going before I start liking Kanye West more. Ye wanted Swift to tweet about Famous the same day it comes out, basically saying like, hey, I know this is shocking, I know this is gonna cause news, but let Taylor Swift respond to it so it definitely becomes news. Like it's very it's three-dimensional chess here from Kanye West. It's kind of interesting. But I think you can kind of get Taylor Swift defends kind of like in a catty way, saying like, look, I understand why you're saying I made her famous, because there are a lot of people, yourself included, who didn't know I was famous. I mean, you didn't know who I was, even though I sold 7 million albums the year before you did that, which is what happened.
That's a big dick move right there. Just drop it on the table.
Yeah.
Thump.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, okay, maybe you were just stupid and didn't know that I exist as a huge artist, but you know, whatever. But yeah, that was... I think from this, you can kind of see two things. A, you can see Taylor Swift, who, like, to give her a really, really, really tiny amount of credit, did try to make Kanye West's lyrics a little bit less provocative. Of course, Kanye had his own thing. But then, like, to Kanye, you see, like, later on the 25-minute video, he's going on these long diatribes about, like, running for president, venture capital, all these other, like, random things. We're just like, this is what happens when rich fucks talk to each other. And they don't have conversations like you and I normally do. They have rich fuck conversations.
Yeah, like, listen to the conversation, and it's such a different world where it's like, how is this reality for these sets of people too?
Yeah, and how are they this detached from other things that affect different artists? And so we go from like the top of the music food chain to the bottom of it.
So Bandcamp is waiving its cut of sales on Friday to support artists. So
waived them last Friday.
Yes, last Friday. So all the profits are going to go directly to the artists because they know it's struggling out there and it's real out here.
Artists can't. We've said that like the main way artists can really make money now is by going on tour. The album releases are basically just advertisements for their tour.
Exactly.
And so like they can't tour right now.
They can't make money. So that's a great way for doing that. And that's why we always like to end AudioFace on a fun note / happy note. And this has been AudioFace episode 134.
How much of the profit do they usually take? It's usually like 25-30%. I don't know if it's
for Bandcamp. I don't know off the top of my head.
I mean, they're usually pretty generous compared to other sites.
Yeah, Bandcamp isn't terrible. I know because some of them are like you only take 10 or 20% or something, which is fucking thievery.
Yeah, but this is like you pay $9.99, the artist gets $9.99 for this album.
Yeah, exactly. I really like that, especially for times like this when they basically have no other income source. So next week we'll have Fortet, Little Dragon, and Make the Stallion.
We're thinking, hopefully.
And then someone just drops random shit. We reserve the right to tweak
things around.
But that's the idea, since we had some of those albums planned for today, but because of reasons. And I personally like doing 3 albums because I can get more in depth than 4. I feel rushed / not prepared as much.
Totally
so
fair.
I like to give the people a fair, honest, unafraid, fair, balanced, unafraid album reviews.
Thank you very much for listening.
This has been AudioFace 134. If you haven't already, follow us on at AudioFacePod from all of the social medias, because I'm doing a good social media plug right now, Dan. Follow me at SW Suarez if you want to know my life, I guess. Follow Dan from at Dan from the web on Twitter, Dan from the internet on Instagram. Check it out. Dan's doing more YouTube videos, more clips and stuff out. So be sure to do that. Go look up our YouTube page.
I'm posting a lot more stuff from the archives of AudioFace.
The AudioFace Public Library.
Yes.
Coming to you soon.
No. YouTube.audioface.show for all of that. We're doing a little couple of tweaks to the website and everything I've been talking about for the past couple of months, but they're actually about to go live with the time that I have. So check that out. Thank you very much for listening. We'll have more next week. And we're going to also talk about April, which is next month, which we're going to have
so much stuff.
Also, check out the political reports if you haven't already. We might do another one at some point. Maybe that'll be like the coronavirus remote podcast. That'll be really fun. But check all that stuff out. Thank you very much for listening, and we'll talk to you next week. Bye.